Welcome to Friday night. It's May 24th, 2013, and Primetime Sports is on the radio and on television. Yours truly, Bob McCown, along with John Shannon, Gordon Kirk, Paul Jones, for the Friday roundtable here on this 24th of May. Some hockey talk in this hour, maybe predominantly hockey talk in this hour. Govern yourselves accordingly. Let's begin at the beginning with the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Ottawa Senators will try and avoid elimination tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins. You never know in any sport what's going to happen on any given night. And many times we've all been surprised at when it looked obvious that one thing was going to happen, something else happens. But it is really hard for me to close my eyes and envision the Ottawa Senators going to a game six. John Shannon.
Agreed.
Turn your mic on, please.
Agreed. You know, the Penguins, we got a really good whiff of what the Penguins are in game four with their depth. Sidney Crosby didn't really have a prolific night on the score sheet, but was absolutely amazing from opening puck drop to the end of the game. And he was joined by a merry band of guys that's 9-10 players deep. And I think that there's no team in the NHL with the depth that the Penguins have right now. And, you know, they're getting goaltending that everybody is waiting to collapse still. But at the same time, the Penguins seem to be, you know, playing themselves into form.
Kirk?
Well, I would have agreed with you guys.
Except
that
you have many political friends in Ottawa that you don't want to offend.
I don't want to offend the political people in Ottawa. But more than that, I think after the inspirational and motivational speech by Daniel Alfredson, the team will rise to the occasion and fold. I don't think they'll win another game.
John, you talked about that.
What was that all about? That speak. I know you love Daniel Alfredson.
I do. I think he's
a respect
magnificent
Daniel
player.
Alfredson. But what is that speech? Yeah, we're done. Give me the puck.
I hope in some way it was lost in translation.
He speaks English.
I hope it's
who's
lost.
Who's translating?
No, I
get he's a Swede, but that was 25 years ago.
I hope that somehow, some way it was lost in translation. And that I think that when you look at what he answered, how he answered was, without the parenthesis, is putting in, well, with all the odds against us, oh, probably not.
Yeah. No, and yay for honesty. Yay. Big yay for honesty.
Yeah. I mean, we always get mad at guys for saying the cliche things,
yes.
And now we're making fun and ridiculing a guy for basically telling the truth.
That's why radio can go on and on. Yeah.
To me, the implication.
You love it, Bob.
To me, the implication in all of that was, yeah, you know what? It's probably not going to be done. But that doesn't mean we're not going to try, like,
right.
You know what, to get it done. And, John, I mean, I watched that game the other night. At one point, what, Crosby had won 8 straight faceoffs? Cleanly. And before we came on air, you made the point, and I thought it was great. Anderson was, like, he stopped. Like, that first period, he was standing on his head. And then to think he got pulled in the third period. Well, yeah. And, John, as you said, it's like playing the Miami Heat. Like, it's like holding water in your hands. You can only do it for so long. Mm-hmm. And they just kept coming. And it's not just Crosby. Like, the more I watch, and I know he's a great player, but the more I watch Malkin, it's like he's playing with five-year-olds. He's bigger. He's stronger. He's faster. They can't hit him. They can't take the puck off him. It was just a matter of time before, you know, and I got my youngest, I don't know how it happened, but my youngest is a Senators fan at home, and it's like, kid, go to bed. It's 3-2. He goes to bed. He wakes up in the morning. Dad, what's the score? 7-3. Like, what? What happened? Well,
hold on. You sent your son to bed
at 3-2?
Before the game was over?
Look, we have a rule in our house on a Friday night.
It's the Stanley Cup playoffs.
No, John, but our rule in the house is on the night when you can see the cup, you get to stay up. And you drag your butt out of bed the next day and you're tired at school, but you saw the cup. They're not seeing the cup for another couple of weeks, and there was no way Ottawa was coming back in that game. So go to bed.
Wow.
Tough.
Harsh.
Were you a teacher or a principal?
Zing. Zing. Okay, Sergio.
It was 3-2, Paul.
Yeah, but
3-2.
Okay, let me ask you this.
Evil father.
Let me ask you this.
Do you get anything for Father's Day at all?
Like, occasionally.
Wood.
Just to ensure, do you turn the central power off?
Were they coming back, Ottawa?
That's not the point. You don't know. You don't know. I don't know. Nobody at this table knows. Nobody's sitting at home.
I had a pretty good idea.
You had no idea. You can't mitigate the impact of what you've done.
Your son is scarred for life.
No, he's scarred not. For no, he's life. Not. He slept in his Carlson jersey, okay? So he's fine.
Oh, my God. So it's just the back of his heels that are scarred for life.
It's worse.
We're letting him stay up tonight to watch them shake hands.
All right. Oh, to shake hands.
Friday night, he doesn't have school tomorrow.
Well, so he can stay up.
Aren't you sympathetic? Holy
cow. You're just
cow.
Killing me at home. He's at home listening to this going like.
I always liked your kids. What? They're good kids.
Yeah, they're good Which kids. Which one is this now?
Surprisingly. The youngest.
What's his name?
Michael.
Michael.
You're stay killing
up.
Me.
Stay up.
You're killing me.
And next week, if you want to stay up and watch the game, you say Uncle Bob said it was okay.
You might be coming to Uncle
you
Bob's
behave.
House.
I was going to say, is Uncle Bob making him breakfast? He's going to sleep over at Uncle Bob's?
Sure, he can come over.
Him and the rest of the Ottawa Senators, because they'll be out next week, too.
Well, whatever.
Michael, you really know how to hurt your son. You're just
Michael can come over and stay up all night if he wants. Oh,
give him cake for breakfast, I bet.
He's got to get his ass out of bed in the morning. But when you come to pick him up. Red Wings 3, Blackhawks 1. Now, come on. Nobody saw this coming.
No.
And I know no. We've been talking about it for a few days now, like that. You know, clearly we underestimated the Detroit Red Wings. I don't know that we overestimated the Chicago Blackhawks, but we certainly underestimated the Detroit Red Wings. But even in the back of my mind, I thought, oh, somehow this thing will sort itself out. And yeah. I guess it still could. But, boy, there is no sign there either.
No, this is, to me now, this is a case of the Blackhawks unraveling under the constant pressure of the Detroit Red Wings, of not just Datsyuk and Zetterberg, but everyone. I mean, they got a rookie line, their third line with Nyquist and Anderson and Brunner on it that is playing very well. Jimmy Howard is solid in goal.
Yeah.
But, you know, this calm, cool, collected bunch of, you know, the President's Trophy winning team, they've lost their swagger. They've lost their cool. Jonathan Toews has lost his cool. Joel Quenneville's yelling at his goalie to get back on the ice when the faceoff's 23 feet away. There's something in Chicago that whether it's the learning curve of learning how to lose before you win, but there's something very wrong in Chicago right now.
So you think it's more the Blackhawks?
No,
it is the Red Wings.
I want to give the Red Wings their full due, but I would tell you there are a lot of teams that would, underneath that pressure that the Red Wings have done, would just push back and wouldn't do stupid things. Boston, I don't think, would do stupid things. I think Chicago's doing silly things, and I think that that it's reflecting on their inability to have really solid scoring opportunities.
I wonder if it wasn't just, I mean, the way Chicago, and remember the season, too. We're not talking about a regular season, the shortened season. They played so well. And I know people will say, well, it's pro sports and it's never supposed to be easy. But I wonder if they didn't get the feeling that, not that they would say this is going to be easy, but hey, we're good. We know we're good. And eventually we'll get through all this. And Detroit has just put the wall up and saying, no, you're not getting through this. Not without a lot of hard work. And as you said, John, that's when the panic sets in.
Yeah.
Because, hey, this used to work before. This kind of stuff. I mean, Taves, Three penalties and to have somebody else, he's supposed to be the leader, have somebody else stick their head in the penalty box and go, dude, can you, like, you know,
get it together
here? We need you. Like, that doesn't happen. And that outward, too. I mean, in the middle of the penalty box, it's not like he did it in the dressing room behind closed doors. John, that's the word, unraveling in my eyes.
You know, they hadn't lost three games in a row all season. They have now in this series. They hadn't been shut out this season until last night.
The power play?
Where Patrick Kane has gone is, you know, an interesting one. Taves at least is getting his opportunities, but is almost, he's squeezing the stick almost too much. And that's where the emotional side of the game is really, to me, I that's why I say it's as much pressure and as quality opportunities the Red Wings are creating. A lot of this is on Chicago.
Yeah, but look, it may be, but this is a Detroit team
that beat an Anaheim team in seven games when they were down 3-2 and with their butts up against the banister, an Anaheim team that I argued through the course of the season was, if not as good as Chicago, then only a tick behind them. And the only other team that was in the same class during the regular season was probably the Pittsburgh Penguins when they had Sidney. So those are the three teams that I looked at as the absolute cream of the crop in the National Hockey League. And the Detroit Red Wings are one game away from knocking off 1-2 in consecutive series. I mean, that's impressive. And a team that 2 weeks before the end of the regular season didn't
life
look like
death.
They were going to make the playoffs.
Death, yeah.
The four straight victories in the regular season that got them in.
So this is one of those scenarios, and we see this. We saw it last year to a great extent. The LA Kings did almost exactly what the Detroit Red Wings are doing this year. They went on a run late in the season to back into the playoffs. They were an 8 seed last year, weren't they?
Yes, they were, Bob.
They won the cup.
And wind up winning the Stanley Cup. Now, I don't think their road was necessarily as tough as Chicago's will be, but nonetheless.
Detroit's.
But it's a familiar, if you get hot at the right time.
The Kings are playing
funny
great
things
at home.
Can happen.
The Kings are playing great at home, too. I looked at the stats today. In the second round, home teams are 14-3. And, I mean, what are the Kings? They've won 13 in a row at home now? Like, they that was easy last night.
The Red Wings, though, it does, we talked about their depth. They do have the best player in the Western Conference on their team right now in Pavel Datsyuk, by far. Henrik Zetterberg has elevated his game because he's been given the responsibility of driving Taves nuts. And when you have two of those players of that elite level on your club, you have a chance. And it just so happens they seem to have dragged the other 16 skaters with them. And that's the impressive part.
LA takes the 3-2 lead over San Jose. And yet, I don't know if I don't know how much confidence I have in the LA Kings. I grant you they were impressive with their Game 4 victory or Game 5 victory. But is everybody comfortable that LA still wins this series?
No, I don't think it's still a pick 'em.
I think it is.
It's still a pick 'em. Yeah. You know, it's a home ice. It's been a home ice series.
Yeah.
And San, believe it or not, San Jose had some pretty good opportunities last night. Niemi was very good. The thing with the Kings, though, they are just. They are relentless. You know, now they don't have Jarrett Stahl and they miss Jarrett Stahl, but the fact that they were able to put Lewis in that position as the number three center, he goes and scores a key goal last night. He scored a key goal in game two of the series. They are big and fast and deep, and they have Jonathan Quick.
Did they not have, in a sense, John, some of the mindset that Detroit has? And when you look at them coming off winning the cup last year, and some of those guys still in the room,
my comparison of those two teams is I would tell you that there's a lot more finesse in Detroit. The Kings are a lot more physical team, and it almost, you know, they will run right through you in L.A. The Kings will run right through you. Detroit, they will just skate around you. And they will. That to me is the bigger difference.
Who has the advantage if it's an LA Detroit final? In the West,
yeah. Well,
because they are two teams who like to play the game differently.
Totally. And well, I tell you what, and I've talked to tons of people in the league in the last month that have said the Kings always dictate their own style of play in every game, and. If they're able to dictate the play 100% against a team as strong-willed as Detroit, that will be fascinating to watch.
If you're physical, though, don't you have that advantage? If as you said, if they're going to run over people, I mean,
yeah, but you can't hit what you can't catch.
No, but at the same time, though, those guys slow down. It's like basketball. At the end of the game, big guys don't get smaller. Quick guys slow down.
Watch the Red Wings play the game. It's interesting. You talked about basketball. Watch the picks.
Oh yeah.
They pick better than anybody. Look, they provide obstruction.
Here's
better
something
than
I noticed,
anyone.
John, and you guys as hockey guys, when I was a kid in the 70s and everybody looked at the way the Russians played, they didn't chip and chase. There were picks at the blue line and they carried the puck over the blue line.
Always.
I see a lot of that with Detroit. I really do. It's not always the you know, dump and chase.
They play a lot of dump and chase.
But you watch it and watch the goals. If anybody goes back on YouTube and watches their goals, there's a ton of goals that will happen just in front of the net where there's a cut, and it's amazing how the defender runs into or gets nudged by another Detroit forward. Behind the net, it's amazing how there's a little obstruction. Not enough to be a penalty, but just enough to create a little bit of interference. And Mike Babcock's done a very good job with his club creating a game plan with that. The Kings will just try to run right over you.
The Rangers and Boston Bruins, I think most of us would have thought this series, we'd be talking about the end of this series and how Boston has now got a little rest and waiting for their next opponent. But they're going to have to soldier on and go back to Boston for a game five. The Rangers pull out a 4-3 victory, erasing a 2-goal deficit in the game. Do we believe?
Did Tuukka Rask have New York last night letting that first goal in? Like, I mean,
that's not right.
Oh, sorry. But I mean, how does that, the Stanley Cup playoffs, did he just trip? I mean.
That's what he says.
Okay.
Fell down, went boom.
Okay.
It happens.
Look, the Bruins are a force. I mean, they beat that juggernaut, the Maple Leafs, and came comeback style. So you can't, the Bruins are, they're not going to have trouble with New York.
Well, we understand that. It was one game.
Yeah.
They were a better team. The Rangers were a better team without Brad Richards in the lineup, though.
Well,
at least the second half.
And Aaron Ashton.
And how are you with Tortorella's answer to all that at the end?
You know what?
Torts is going to be gone at the end of this year anyway, isn't he?
You think?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I do.
I don't.
I thought for the first time the way he answered that, and he was truthful and forward without being over the top.
Except that, Paul, there's so much in your face with John Tortorella. So much to... You know, New York writers aren't you know, the most kindly and cuddly people in the world. But at the same time, they have questions to ask that should be answered.
Yes.
And for him to go back in your face and say that you're, you know, you can construe this any way you want, but don't construe my words. Here's what's going on. I mean,
don't put words
in
my mouth, he said.
I just
I'm tired of his act.
His confrontational style at this time of year is, I think, a little over the top.
John,
still.
You would know this. How do the players feel about him?
That's a good question. I would suspect that most of them don't have much time for him.
Yeah, that's what I would suspect, but I don't know.
And if they did have time for him, they've lost.
Well, the one guy that was one of his biggest supporters was Brad Richards.
Sitting up in the press box.
There's the answer.
I'm guessing that relationship isn't on the most solid ground. Nobody around this table, I'm presuming, believes that the New York Rangers have a comeback in them.
Listen, and it's a broken record. The only way it happens, they get one quick early goal, and then Lundqvist is unconscious.
Yeah, but we're waiting for that to happen. I mean, he's been a little too conscious during this series.
I know, but if I had one game to play for all the marbles,
well,
he's my goalie.
Not a guy like Quick or
no,
no.
I've just seen him live in lots of enough times to know that I love the way the guy plays and how competitive he is.
Well, that's why you're not coaching. 19 minutes past the hour. It's prime time.
You can kiss my
Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet. I was watching Sportsnet. Try and stay awake during the show, for God's sake.
All right, all right.
McCowan, Shannon, Jones, and about half a Kirk on this round table.
That'd be important.
I'll tell you what, Gordy's brother's doing a good thing. Captain Kirk.
Isn't he?
It's a good movie.
Have you seen the new one?
I loved it.
I hear there's a gratuitous
what
scene.
What the hell are you talking about?
Captain Kirk. James T.
Oh, there's the new movie. Star Trek story.
Oh,
Trek.
It's fantastic. There's a
gratuitous... Yeah, but it's all the young kids. It's
young. But this really goes back to the origins of the original TV show.
Are there really bad villains where you can see ropes and stuff?
No,
because that was the original Star Trek.
I know, Bob. I watched every Thursday night.
Now, John, the producer has apologized because there's a gratuitous underwear scene.
Yes, there is. Yeah. And you know, and it is certainly there. Her name is Alice Eve, and she is
gratuitous,
beautiful.
Ah,
and she's in her underwear.
Totally.
And how does she,
as opposed to partially?
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
How does she feel about Captain Kirk?
Can we get off this topic, please?
Well, anyway,
it's not a movie review show.
Oh, okay.
And John just gave it two thumbs up.
Yeah.
God almighty. Buy some popcorn, you two. So in Clogsville, Vancouver, the Vancouver Canucks have dismissed their head coach. Well, the Vancouver Canucks haven't dismissed their head coach. Their general manager dismissed their head coach. You can stay in touch with the folks back in the old hometown.
I do indeed.
What's the sentiment back there before we move on with this? Did the right guy get
I think
chopped?
There's a lot of public sentiment that says they mishandled this and that Alain Vigneault was not the one that should have been receiving his pink slip.
That it should have been Mike Gillis.
Yeah, I mean, countless polls and newspapers and radio stations, I mean, and it's 90-10.
Really that much, huh? Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's peculiar of Vancouver. I'm hearing it everywhere in the hockey world, the same sentiment.
Yeah, I actually like Mike Gillis, and so...
That doesn't surprise me.
No, I know. I was waiting for that, too. I usually put a pause in there. But at this point, there is not one bit of Mike's personality or the organization's personality that has a sympathetic bone in it. And I think that's a real problem. If you're trying to sell tickets and trying to sell hope in a town that's been spoiled for, what, 6 or 7 years now with the quality of the hockey team, this team really now is like, why do I buy it? They're not even really nice to listen to. Their press conferences, you know, Mike's a little grumpy these days.
A little?
Well, I've seen him grumpier.
The three of you guys know this. Isn't that the way it goes, though, in pro sports? If Mike Gillis was the guy that was supposed to go, what do? You point the finger at the next guy and say it's his fault and
we
throw
get
him
that.
Overboard.
Yeah, but the point, though, Jonesy, is the ownership had the opportunity to make the decision as to whether they were going to keep Gillis or not. Now, that doesn't mean that Vigneault was going to be safe. It's possible if they decided to get rid of Gillis, the next general manager.
Always
can come in and
puts the right people in place.
Wants his own coach, so Vigneault may have got it anyway. He just wouldn't have got it from Gillis. So ultimately, ownership decided. You know, Gillis claims he was in a meeting for 4 hours before the news conference the other day with ownership. And presumably, what they were discussing was not the weather or the price of tea. They were talking about whether to lop the head off the head coach. And whether there was opposition to the idea or not, we may never know. But they eventually went along with it. Ownership essentially endorsed Mike Gillis by allowing him to fire Alain Vigneault. That is a truism. There's no maybe about that.
Well,
the other option they could have had was, no, Mike, you're not going to fire Vigneault. We're going to fire you.
Well, the next guy in, I mean, that was Gillis's big move, wasn't it? I mean, when he took over, Vigneault wasn't his coach.
He was already there. Vigneault was already there.
Yeah.
You give the guy, the general manager or the guy who's in charge, if you give him a bullet, okay, now he's used it. The next guy in there better produce or else both of them should be gone.
Well, we don't have that situation.
Well.
See, I think in many ways what is happening in Vancouver is comparable to what we talked about in the earlier hour about at MLSE.
Yeah.
The Vancouver Canucks make a boatload of money. They have done very well in the last 5 or 6 years, 4 or 5 years. They did well counting cash out of the Olympics. They've spent well for the arena in renovating parts of the arena. They have new office tower that's connected to the arena being built as we speak. And in many ways, a lot of the vision of that has been Mike Gillis's. So it's difficult to sit there if you're the owner and say, hold on, we like 80% of your plan, but, you know, we've got some issues. Mike, we have to stick with you. We still like your business plan. And when you think you're stuck with the contracts, your players, and we like Mike, there's only one thing that can change. And it was, and that's Alain Vigneault and Newell Brown and Rick Bonus.
Do you believe, though, and anybody jumping on this, I'll throw it to John first, but do you believe that the Vancouver Canucks, simply by changing the head coach, and I'll even give you solving the Luongo situation, which should have been solved a year ago,
mm-hmm.
even with that, can the Vancouver Canucks be a contender for the Stanley Cup next year?
No.
Neither do I. And whose fault is that? Is that the head coach's fault? So you bring, you're going to, Gillis has basically put this team together. I know he inherited some pieces. Everybody does. He basically put this team together. And
major pieces, yeah. Main pieces.
And his plan is try and solve the Luongo situation and find another coach. How does that change the outcome?
Well,
is Vigneault, were they not listening to Vigneault anymore? Was he the problem?
I don't think there was any issue of problem. I think what you've hit on, Bob, is that you know the talent on the roster it got a little older.
Good enough any longer.
Some of the judgments they made on players, bringing players in, David Booth, Keith Ballard, not good enough.
Who did that?
Mike did. And those are, but Mike is being given the opportunity to repair the mistakes.
Right.
In what I would describe, and nobody likes the word rebuild, but in a retooling of a situation. I look at what, I mean, the best example of any team in the league is Detroit. The ability to lop off players left and right all the time, and they just keep coming, and their scouting staff does a great job, and their development system.
There's only one of those, though.
Yeah, they're the blueprint.
They're the blueprint.
Yeah.
And that's the issue for the Canucks is how do they retool when they, you know, they right now they don't even have a place where an American League hockey team is. It might be going to Utica, New York, but that's not a guarantee.
They're in danger of becoming the Calgary Flames.
Oh, they're not that bad, Bob.
They're in danger of becoming the Calgary Flames.
Playoffs this year, Bob. I mean, I know they've gone backwards. And as John said, in any league.
The point is holding on, believing in your core talent for too long and not making fundamental change.
You can hold on to core talent if you've got the other pieces around to support and the core talent doesn't have to do it all the time. You can get away with that. You see it in other sports.
Well, you can do it if you you can get away with it if you have success.
You've got
but
to
the
make
Calgary Flames never had success with guys like Jerome McGinley as the core guys.
Certainly not in the last 8 years.
And I'm not here to, it's not Jerome McGinley's sole fault. But we've been talking about Calgary using McGinley as a bargaining chip to change the direction of the organization for years.
They've got rid of McGinley and they've changed a whole lot of stuff now.
And they waited till they got next to nothing for him.
Yeah.
You know, so you got the Sedins. I mean, are they the guys at the core? Luongo was clearly a guy who had to be moved. Had to be moved. And this general manager stubbornly put a price tag on him that everybody else in hockey believed was absurd. Because this guy's ego is such that he lives in his own world.
Well, if he wants to keep his job, he's going to have to part of his ego and bring the price of the house down.
Nobody can sit here and say that the Luongo situation perpetuated over an additional regular season and into the playoffs when it should have been and could have been resolved prior to the start of the season. He had more than enough time to make that move. That wasn't a contributing factor to the kind of year they had and ultimately what happened to them at the end. To what degree? It's pure hypothesis. Nobody knows. But you can't say that wasn't a blunder of biblical proportions. It was. And it remains that way every day that Gillis doesn't correct that situation.
Well, look, it was a lockout shortened season. I'm sure that had something to do with it. He had his chances early and didn't.
It gave him an extra 3 months to move him. You're going to tell me that nobody was talking during the lockout? They're talking all the time.
Listen,
they may not have been able to do anything, but they were talking.
You know, people give people time to back out.
You know as well as I do.
I do not.
You know as well as I do. They were so close to moving him before the lockout even started.
But they didn't. It doesn't matter how close they were. This is not horseshoes or hand grenades. This is, do you do it or do you not do it?
Oh, no, I understand
and
what you mean.
They didn't do it.
Well, the problem was they viewed Roberto in so many ways as a pure hockey trade as opposed to what they've learned in the NBA.
Right.
is a salary dump.
It's contracts.
It's a contract trade.
It's contracts.
And that's the biggest error. And that's something that has not really been well documented and learned in the NHL yet.
Well, they're going to learn now because you got, for the first time in history, you got a cap that's going down.
Yeah. Oh, no, they got some issues that way. But the question is are there, how big is their core? You like the Twins? Sure. You like Ryan Kessler? Maybe. You like Kevin Bieksa? You know, and Corey Schneider. So
yeah, but that's about it.
Well, there might be six or seven key guys that they have. The question is to Paul's point, and I agree with Paul, is their support guys, the guys that were supposed to come up and provide that second wave of goal scoring, provide the second line of defense, never showed
and
up.
And to me, yeah. It's the example that we talked about earlier is Detroit, both. John. I mean, it's hard to rebuild on the fly because normally you dip. You go to the bottom and you start grabbing draft picks and young players and taking guys out of the A and whatever. And Detroit has been able to do it. I mean, hey, one of the best guys last year picked up and went back to Europe. Look at Detroit. They're a game from being in the conference final again. It's hard to do that. And I think if you're Vancouver, you do have, a limited window to try and do that. And then before it gets too late, it's time to start moving those guys.
I got news to you. That door is open about this much. That's about how much time he's got.
For Mike Gillis, which
means he's got this offseason. No. And so far, I mean, I'm not a Vancouver fan. I don't dwell on them. We're sitting here in Toronto. I can watch from afar, and I think I can make an impassioned observation of what I believe is going on in that organization. And I believe that organization has to start turning over some of these guys who have been key guys for them, but they need fresh, young blood.
They need an
infusion of not just talent, but energy and somebody different to change the direction.
So you don't mind the coach being dismissed then? Because everything that you just talked about, you could put Alain Vigneault dismissed, change in direction, new energy, someone to listen to. Those are things that would fit into having Vigneault be fired.
They don't replace the things I talked about. As part of that equation, sure.
Okay.
But I don't replace it. You don't say, I have a choice. I can change a bunch of players or I can fire the coach. You got to change a bunch of players. Yeah. If you choose to fire the coach, that's fine. But what I would have done is I would have started and looked at the resume of this general manager, and quite frankly, I don't blame Alain Vigneault for going out in the first round the last 2 years. I blame Gillis.
But I don't want to make it sound like it's a complete defense of Mike Gillis, but this is a team.
But it is.
Well, went to the Stanley Cup final, won the President's Trophy twice in a five-year period, 486 consecutive sellouts. Did play an entertaining brand of hockey, and the problem was they lost in the first two rounds. First last year to the Stanley Cup champions.
That's right.
Yeah.
And this year in this stupid stub season. So all of a sudden, I think you can spin it that says they had one bad year, and now we're trying to throw everybody out. I don't think so.
I think you're right. Then what we should do is Gillis should keep his job and Luongo should stay there.
We're getting rid of Luongo. God, I've been trying to get rid of Luongo for a year, Bob.
Let's not make any changes there. And let's become Calgary. Let's be like Nero. Let's just keep fiddling and watch that city burn, and maybe the fire department will show up and put it out. Oops, the fire department left town. And then you're the Calgary Flames. And how's their past look? And how does their future look?
Flames. Is that there a pun in there or somewhere? No.
It's prime time on the Fan Radio Network and Sportsnet.
Are you still talking?
No, I'm done.
I just got off the line with Mike Gillis.
Yeah. Mike, did you hear? I know.
Oh, stop. Yeah, I have a tough enough time.
I love you.
Sorry, John.
I love you too.
Sorry, John. That was a clay pigeon. Oh. I could not resist. I'll throw one up for you.
No, ew.
Oh, no
it's
need.
Okay.
No need.
I'm sitting on my side of the table here with all my friends. Oh, my friend.
So anyway,
there is a line there. Is that just visible on TV, like the 10-yard line, 10-yard marker?
So Tim Lewicki, the not quite ready for primetime president, although he fired the general manager, intimated that he may make some changes. Now, depending on how you viewed his comments, he could have meant going to change the colors, going to change the style of the uniform, going to maybe change the logo, or did he actually mean maybe we'll change the nickname? Maybe the Toronto Raptors will be no more.
We know what you want. We know what you want.
Well, I don't think he meant we're going to. I don't personally think he meant we're considering changing the nickname.
No, neither did I.
It's a pretty wide term when you talk about the brand.
Do you think so? As the voice of the Toronto Raptors?
I don't know. It's a pretty wide
term. Would you change it?
A lot of people want Huskies. The first NBA game played in Toronto.
First game, period.
Yeah, first game in Toronto, the Knicks and the Huskies. Yeah. And, John, you know that, I mean, it's the blue and white, that they've worn those before. There are a lot of people that we run into that want Huskies.
I'm flabbergasted. If that's where we're going to start, if Tim is bright enough to tell me that we change the name of the team, we're going to have a winning team, I'm all for it.
But that ain't happened.
No. Yeah. I would start somewhere other than the name or the colors. Unless someone says that's going to make
the colors,
better
I could care less.
Well, I mean,
the
colors have changed. I don't know how many times.
The colors have already morphed ugly purple, and really, the colors are red, white, and black now, aren't they?
Right. And when he talked about being Canada's team, like, why would you change from the red and white? You might want to change some other stuff, but red and white. I mean, they've got the little maple leaf on the back. They're moving that way. I don't know if I'd change the colors necessarily. So then what?
Well, I tell you what, calling the Raptors Canada's team, to me, is a stretch right now.
That's what he wants, John.
Yeah, but I want to be prime minister, too. That doesn't, you know, I just don't know. I just don't have $90,000 to start the campaign.
Are the Toronto Blue Jays Canada's team?
I think they are.
Yeah, they are.
But Bob, that totally different approach.
Yes.
Totally different approach and has been since 1977. Totally different approach. You and I talked about this yesterday, was that the people who had the vision with the Blue Jays was, even if they didn't get any money out of it, was to put the Blue Jay logo everywhere.
And it was Peter Bevesi's idea.
And yes, was just to get it into the marketplace, coast to coast, even with the
Expos. You can have it anytime.
Yeah.
We're not going to charge you for it.
Yeah.
And you wanted to use our logo?
Well, and when they had the success and the communication and the media stretched it out, I mean, you got people listening in Saskatchewan now. Mm-hmm. You know, people listening in Winnipeg.
Oh, absolutely.
Places like that,
Vancouver, across Canada. But,
exactly.
But I don't recall, to refresh my memory, did they ever call themselves Canada's team while the Expos were still in existence?
No, but the Maple Leaf was still on the logo, which was
absolutely
always a wise thing to do.
Yes.
I mean, my point about the Raptors is that you can start calling yourself Canada's team when you start winning. Because that's all the people that follow basketball want right now. And I don't care. They could wear fuchsia for all I care, as long as they win. Don't say it, Gord.
Yes.
My point being is that I think brand, the most important issue in branding
is winning,
is on the court.
Yeah.
And putting, you know, the ball through the hoop.
Well, then they'll wait a long time.
Well,
it's MLSE. They'd screw up a one-car parade. Phil Jackson says he'd take Bill Russell over Michael Jordan to start a team.
Yeah, so would I.
That doesn't surprise me either.
He's a
Kirk.
Oh, it's close for me, but I won't be a fence setter. I would probably opt for Michael Jordan.
Jonesy?
If you're going to play old-fashioned, inside out, and that's why the game has gone the way it has now, because there's no solid big men to play that way. Miami's going to get a challenge because Indiana has some. And in the West,
quick. Yes,
I would go with the big guy.
I'd go
with
neither.
The big guy.
Who do you think would be my choice?
Oh, you're going to
take. If it was neither.
If it was neither, you'd go with Wilt.
Nope. If it was neither. If it was neither Jordan or Russell.
Oh, you'd take Shaq.
Nope.
Okay, Nash. Tell us, Bob.
Magic.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. And I could
do
live
more.
With that. I could live with that.
Can do more and can make everybody around you
I think
better player.
That's what Bill Russell did better than
much better. We got to take the last pause for tonight, which means the end of the show. Have a nice weekend. Good night.